Of course, I was always humorous, but so in this way, your relationships tended to be rather rough. And if you mentioned the word, you know, devotees should have loving relationships, that meant you probably fell down from Krishna consciousness. And if someone got married, you weren't supposed to love your wife. Your wife wasn't supposed to love her husband. It was just supposed to be like some sort of deal, like you go to work for Microsoft. it was quite a bit different. And the children were just considered little et cetera's, you know, byproducts that interfered with your real service for making money, distributing books or whatever. So that was, unfortunately, there wasn't that stress on relationships. And of course, Prabhupada, that wasn't from Prabhupada, that was from the devotee's immature understanding, which is quite understandable, because the devotees, like myself and everyone else, we were all kids. I mean, you could imagine a movement being run by 21-year-olds and 22-year-olds. And if you were 24, you were grandfather or something. You were an old man. You were a senior Vaishnava. You know, and I took sannyasa when I was 28. You know, I'm 69 now. Going to be 69. It's a lot of years, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Wow. My anniversary. So anyway, so it was a bunch of kids. It's like kindergarten spiritual life. There's a bunch of kids, and obviously our relationships weren't so good. We weren't trained up, and most of us weren't with Prabhupada a lot. So that's why. Things were like that. And then when Prabhupada left the planet, things got worse for some time. You had the zonal acharya years, Hare Krishna, which you probably heard about. The zonal acharya years, where basically everybody had to be, let's say, a disciple. Even if you were a disciple of Prabhupada, you had to be a disciple of one of the 11 acharyas. And it was a very difficult time for all of us. So in other words, relationships have always been a struggle. And it's understandable because we're a new movement, there are a bunch of young kids, and things are doing better now in the movement. And I'm trying to contribute, to answer your question, I'm trying to contribute to Prabhupada's movement with the relationship strategy. Help, because it gives me pain to see people who are not having good relationships with each other. As I mentioned yesterday, conflicts, I welcome conflicts because it's necessary to have different opinions. It's how you deal with the conflicts is the point. You know, if you don't have conflicts, you're all dead. You know, you're individuals. You have to have different opinions. But how do you resolve these different opinions? All right, so with that introduction, it's time for Prashant. So,
we would like to welcome all the devotees, and we would especially like to welcome Balgavin Prabhu, Balkrishna Prabhu, coming up along.
And that's all.
Thank you for joining. But also, we would like to welcome back. Very, very, very happy to see Prateek Prabhu back with us. Prateek Prabhu, Nidhi Mataji, and kids. So Maharaj, I was telling you about the devotee who had this brain stroke. So this is his first visit to our program after almost 2 years, almost a year and a half or something like that. Yeah. So we are very, very happy to see you and your family. So let's welcome Prateek Prabhu and family. But now please have a
Hari Bol.
And you're completely cured and everything now?
Almost. Getting there.
That's amazing. I heard about that. The brain stroke was in the stem, right?
Yes, it was in the stem.
Wow.
And he made through. Like,
Krishna came and saved, like Prahlad Maharaj was saved.
Because of Krishna and his devotees, able to speak today and stand and walk.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I was with Jai Patakamaras when he had his stroke. I was the last person to speak to him before his stroke. And the doctors were saying, you know, he's gone. And then because of his determination and Krishna's mercy, he came out. It's amazing, you know, especially in the brainstem like that. Yeah. Krishna save you. Yeah. Krishna so saves the ones he loves. Krishna saved me sometimes, too. I'll tell you stories about that, but you don't want to hear it. Krishna saved me in Mahapur. You got to be careful. I can tell you this brief story. You got to be careful what you ask Krishna for. One time I was in Vrindavan, and I was with a group of people that were arguing with each other, talking about conflicts. And I was thinking, I really don't want to go on parikrama with these people. So I said to Krishna, you know, out loud. It's all right, I don't need another band. It's cool enough. I said to Krishna out loud that, please, Krishna, make arrangements so I don't have to go on parikrama with these people. That was a mistake, I said that. In Vrindavan, I said that. You know, where every tree is a desired tree, and land is Chintamani. So the next thing I knew, just to be brief, to tell the next thing I knew the toilet that I was on broke and it split and I had a cut in me this long and this deep. Right next, it didn't hit the artery, but right next to the artery. You know, because I asked Krishna for something to fulfill my desire. And then, Mahaprabhu was with me at that time. Then they rushed me to the hospital in Mathura. And in Mathura, they're not going to go into all the details, but the doctor asked me if I want to use new needles or used needles.
Oh,
I said, it'll cost more for new needles. I said, new needles. So to make a long story short, there's a lot more that happened in the story. I couldn't go on parikrama with these devotees. And more or less, I think that Krishna spanked me. And fortunately, I didn't get any long-term bad effects from the whole thing. But I had to have 20 stitches, 10 inside, 10 outside. So the moral of the story is, be careful what you ask Krishna for. Because Krishna will fulfill your desire, but maybe not in the way that you like. I mean, just like the story of Narada Muni. Narada Muni one time was feeling romantic. You know the story? He asked for a face that nobody would forget. Mm. Nobody knows that story?
Hari.
Yeah, he asked for a face of Hari. Mm. And Hari, it's a nice mean monkey, so. Lord Narayan. Nobody's heard this story before? Because he was feeling proud that he didn't have any lust or anything like that. So he got interested in one particular girl. So he went to Lord Narayan and he said, give me a face like Hari, or no one will forget. And so Lord Narayan gave him the face of a monkey.
Wow.
So he was at the Swayamvara for this girl, who happened to be Lakshmi. And she went through all the men and she saw, you know, she started laughing when she saw this guy with a monkey face on. And Narada Muni didn't realize that's what he looked like. And then he looked in a mirror and he got really angry at Lord Narayan. And he said to Lord Narayan, because you have done this, I curse you to be dependent on monkeys to get your wife back. Oh. You know that, right? And that's part of the story, the Ramayan story. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, don't ask Krishna for something unless it's a pure devotional service. You know, unless you pray to Krishna for money, and you may get money, but it may cause, you'd be so much in anxiety you wouldn't believe it. So it's always good to pray to Krishna for pure devotional service. Because Krishna says, in the Bhagavatam, that for those who I especially favor, I take away those things that are impediments in devotion. You know, I take away things. Hari also means to steal or to take away. I take away their wealth. And then I put them in a position, Krishna says, where they can take shelter of the holy names, and even their friends and relatives may reject them. It's interesting. Vishyam. Yeah, so, anyway, so be careful what you ask Krishna for. That's the moral of the story. All right, so why don't we chant to Chaitanya Madhava and then begin the program. Well, it's nice to talk informally, at least.
Yes, yes.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare
Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare
Yeah.
Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijaya Anandakoti Vaishnavrin Gajaya Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijaya Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasiti Gaur Bhakta Vrin Gajaya Shishi Radhakrishna Gopa Gopata Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindavanam Kijaya, Maturam Kijaya, Jagannathasami Kijaya, Yamunamai Kijaya, Srimati Lasi Devi Kijaya, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijaya, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Om. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kijaya. Thank you. Okay, so Om Ganati Vidanda Shah Gananjana Shahya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigare Namaha. So I was asked to speak today about purity is the force, right? So that's one of the four, I guess, principles that people used to talk about a lot. You know, books and vases, preaching is the essence, purity is the force, utility is the principle. It's interesting. Prabhupada said purity is the force a number of times, and the other ones he didn't say that much. Actually, Prabhupada never said them all together at the same time. Although that many times these four are attributed to like the essence of Prabhupada's movement and things like that. But and Prabhupada did comment on them from time to time, but Prabhupada never gave them as like the foundational principles, which is interesting. Although devotees sometimes say, Prabhupada said these are the four foundational principles. I mean, they're in line with Prabhupada's desires, that's true. So, but as far as purity is the force, Prabhupada did speak about that particular thing. So let's talk about purity. Of course, material purity, first we'll talk about material purity, and then I'm going to read a verse in the Bhagavatam on how to achieve purity. Material purity, of course, is sometimes we understand as being clean. And in the Bhagavatam it says in the predictions about Kali Yuga that someone will think he's purified just by taking a bath. It's one of the principles in Kali Yuga. Think, oh, he's clean because he takes a bath. But, you know, there's internal purity, external purity. And, of course, there's also something called, which we don't ascribe to, called ritualistic purity. And ritualistic purity is based on the concept that there's many different ideas or concepts that it's based on. Like, if you're born in a certain type of family, you know, it's the ritual. Let's say if you're born in a Brahmin family, you know, it's a pure family. A Kshatriya family, it's a little less pure. A Vaishya family, it's okay because you can give some money. And then Shudra. It's funny, nobody rejects the vices because they have money. Even though the vices are mixed passion and ignorance. So anyway, so that's sort of like ritualistic purity. Then you have all these ritualistic rules that, for example, after someone in your family dies, some places in India it's 11 days, some places it's 21 days. You know, it depends on where you are in India. You can't go to the temple, you're not supposed to cook, etc. And then there's also ritualistic purity about, let's say, a woman gives birth for a certain number of days, she can't come out of the house, or the baby can't see the light, you can't go to the temple. It's interesting that in China, it's like 3 or 4 months. The woman's not supposed to go out of the house. How do I know that? Because one of the devotees who I know, Rupa Raghunath, who's in charge of our Food for Life in Vrindavan, married a girl from China. And she couldn't come out for like 4 or 5 months or something like that. And I said, oh, I'd like to see your kid, and it's 5 months old. Can't. So you have all these ritualistic purity things, and especially Prabhupada would criticize the caste system, because one doesn't simply become pure by taking birth in a certain family. Like we have Ashwatthama, who was born in a Brahmin family, Dronacharya was his father, and he's considered Brahma Bandhu. It means a friend or relative of a Brahmin, and he certainly was not pure. I can tell you that. He did a lot of impure things. So, what we want to touch upon today is spiritual purity and how to achieve spiritual purity. Of course, spiritual purity is mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we know is the nectar of devotion, in the nutshell verse, which is Anyavi Lashita Shunyam Gyanakarma Navritam Anukunyena Krishnana Shilanam Bhakti. And this is actually the type of purity we're interested in. Anyami lashitosha, one should be devoid of desire for liberation, requiring knowledge, or what to speak of material things. Devoid of any sort of self-interest, material, or even, let us say, spiritual self-interest up to liberation. Gyanakarmanaptam, anukulyena. So one should instead simply want to serve Krishna. And he gives three prerequisites. He says, serve Krishna according to what Krishna wants. That's the first thing. not according to your own mental desire. And also serve Krishna with a favorable mood and be active at it. Those are the three different things. Because one could say, well, I'm serving Krishna by meditating on it. Of course, Krishna says in the Gita that one, when one's determination never goes beyond dreaming or procrastination, then that's in the mode of ignorance. So some devotees say, you know, I will serve Krishna as soon as things are favorable, as soon as I get to be 60 years old. You can renounce everything. You know, and I have so many responsibilities. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj says, when Kumara Mitra Pragya Dharma Bhagavatamya, Nurabha Manasa Janma, Tadatru Martha. Human life is very difficult to attain, so you better take up Krishna consciousness from Kumara from the very beginning of life. Kumano Acharet. Acharet means imperative. You must do. Kumano Acharet. So, getting back to the points of Rupa Goswami's verse, it has to be active, it has to be according to what Krishna wants, and it has to be done with the mood of pleasing Krishna. Like we talked about yesterday, that it's not simply external. So here Rupa Goswami is explaining the same principle. He's saying, yes, you have to do it, and do what Krishna wants, and be active to it, but there's a mood. That's what devotional service is. If you just do something for Krishna, and you're not really into it, or doing it with devotion, that's karma yoga. I mean, it's not bad. We're not criticizing. People often think karma yoga means doing what you're doing but being detached about it. I mean, that's a common misconception people have about karma yoga. They say, well, I'm doing what I'm doing, spending money doing this, but I'm not attached with it. I'm a karma yogi. But the word yoga means to connect or connection, use. So karma yoga means to be connected with Krishna by activity. If you have activity connected to Krishna without devotion, that's karma yoga. That's the definition of karma yoga. Because if it's not done for Krishna, it ain't karma yoga. It's karma. Take out the yoga and just put in the karma. It's karma. So you have to add this internal aspect. That was the point I was making yesterday. That yes, I'm doing it to please Krishna. And then, that's purity. That's what we mean by purity. There's nothing. Purity means there's no impurity. And the only way you get rid of impurity is by putting something else there in its place. Like we're talking about how to take care of children. You know, if you tell them no, 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 they hear no, no, no is yes, yes, yes. So instead, you say, would you like to do something? Like this morning, we're talking to two nice little children. We should remain nameless, particularly innocent, again. And we're talking to the mother of the children. He said, you have to simply find out what their interest is and engage them and absorb their minds in doing something, you know, learning or something that they like to do. And Prabhupada said, that's the business of the spiritual master, too. He says, to ascertain the psychophysical nature of a disciple and engage them according to that psychophysical nature. That means, you know, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Otherwise, I mean, Krishna himself says in the Gita that no one should do anyone else's service. That means no one else should do someone else's service if it's not their psychophysical nature, even if you can do it well. Because there's a variety of reasons. First of all, you won't be absorbed. You won't like it, ultimately. That's the main reason. And you really have to be absorbed in what you're doing for Krishna in order to give devotion to Krishna. Otherwise, you're going to be unhappy because we have a psychophysical nature. And therefore, this other nice verse in the fourth chapter of the Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahabir Brahmagnam Brahmanavutam Brahmatena Gantavya Brahma Karma Samanina. That when you're doing something for Krishna and you're absorbed in it, and of course you should be doing it to please Krishna, then that very activity becomes transformed into Brahman, or spirit. That's one of the famous verses in the Gita that the Brahma Kumaris chant all the time. But we're not the Brahma Kumaris. But it's a good verse. I mean, every verse is good. It means when one makes a full offering to Brahman, that offering, just like your offering, Krishna uses the word habir or ghee. You know, that means ghee, not butter. Not oil. Not even corn oil. I've seen people do sacrifices with corn oil. And I thought, yeah, sure, I've been to people's houses and what oil, you know. Corn, it's cold-pressed corn or something. Or olive. No, no one's ever used olive oil. And no one's ever used... no one's ever used olive oil, even though it's healthier than corn oil. No one's ever used petrol either. Or motor oil. So anyway, so if you make a full offering to Brahman with the ghee actually becomes purified. Like Prabhupada said, when Prabhupada was doing a fire sacrifice and there was smoke all over the room, Prabhupada said, this smoke is purifying. Not like the cigarette smoke. It's not purifying. Putrefying. But the problem, so the smoke is actually, everything's offered. The ghee, everything is offered to the fire. And it becomes spiritualized. I'll tell you one funny story. One time I was doing a fire sacrifice, and people brought their 1 ounce gold coins to as part of the fire sacrifice. They put them in right next to them, surrounding the fire. And so I was thinking as I was doing the fire cycle, boy, this is the best fire cycle I've ever done. You know, I've become like Dhananjaya. So, you know, swaha, fantastic. There were like 5 gold, you know, 1 ounce gold coins. That's a lot. So, one, swaha, okay. And so, at the end of the sacrifice, I said, thank you for offering all this to Krishna. And they said, no. We just want to purify our gold and take it back. So I think you all know the story of the Krishna book of King Riga, who accidentally gave away a cow twice to 2 Brahmins and became a lizard in his lifetime. So you don't want to do that. Another time, someone came to the temple. And he had just bought a new Mercedes, and he said, brought to the temple, and he said, I want to offer this to Krishna. And I was thinking, wow. Here I am driving a Prius, you know. We got an upgrade for me, you know. So we did a puja and everything like that, you know, car puja. It's interesting, you're worshiping a car. Anyway, so... I know you're not. You're sanctifying the car, putting garland on the car afterwards. And then, after a while, he drives it away. that's not offering to Krishna. That's using Krishna as the checkout counter man at the supermarket. You know, it's like when you go to the supermarket or Walmart or wherever you go to buy things, then... don't put it in the way of the camera. So when you go to buy things at the supermarket or Walmart or Sam's Club or wherever you buy things, there's always someone that's a cashier. So when you buy something, you're not offering something to the cashier. So here I'm buying a new big screen TV for you. You know, you're just paying your dues so you can walk away with the object without getting arrested. So that's how most people see a sacrifice. Isn't it? That's like a karma conscious sacrifice. Really? Karma yoga sacrifice, whatever. So Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir means making a full contribution to Brahman. Brahman gets to keep it. And, of course, Krishna, Brahmaiti, Paramatmaiti, Bhagavaniti, Shabhyate. Krishna's the supreme Brahman. So it means devotional service. And the point is, everybody, the person making the offering itself, everything becomes completely spiritualized by that process. So that's actually our process of purification. And then also we hear, when we do a fire sacrifice, what is it? Om Apavitra, Apavitrava, Sarvavashtam, Gatavibha, Yaksmaret, Pundurikraksham, Savaya, Avyantara, Shuchi, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. That this verse states whether one is coming from a purified or unpurified background, whether it's a caste or whatever one has done in the last few 24 hours, if one remembers the lotus eyed Lord Buddha Vidaksham, then one can actually approach the transcendental destination. One will become purified. So that's our method of purification. And in this regard, I'd like to read a verse that gives us from the Bhagavatam, which I planned out, that tells us really how to get the utmost purification of the heart. To have no other, be void of any other desires. I mean, it's really hard. If you try to get rid of a desire, by getting rid of the desire, you know, I have that happen all the time. Everybody's come to me and they say, I have this anger. How can I get rid of it? And I say, well, you can't suppress it. You don't want to suppress it or repress it. You know, suppress means keep it down, repress means deny it. Somehow or other, you got to do something about it. And but he thinks the more I want to get rid of the anger, the angrier I get. And the more I want to get rid of this lust, the more I overeat. And it's interesting, because I try to help people with their diet sometimes, so many times, and every time I tell people they eat less, they eat more. Every time I tell people they weigh too much, they get angry with me. So I stopped. Because they say, you just put me in anxiety, and to overcome my anxiety, I have to eat more. Right? I mean, sometimes people eat because of anxiety. It's anxiety being told that when you have a full plate of prasadam in front of you, you can't touch it. You know, just out of anxiety, you're going to eat faster and more. So people ask, you know, how to get rid of lust, how to get rid of overeating, all these other things like that. You know, what's the secret? Well, you got to put something else in its place, and you got to have the mercy of the Lord. So here's a verse that tells us how to get the mercy of the Lord and become purified in the quickest possible fashion. And this is similar to what I was talking about yesterday. This is from the fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. It's 5:12:12, if I remember the number exactly. And it's Jatavarta talking to Maharaj Rabhugana. This interesting story that surrounds us before I read the verse. Jatavarta is the second incarnation of Bharat Maharaj. You all know that Bharat Maharaj, he was the son of Lord Vrishabhadev, and he was in charge of the kingdom, and he gave up his kingdom because he just considered all the material things to be like a hole into which one passes stool. I mean, like one latrine. He just like walked away from it. And walking away from it, he was meditating very nicely, chanting his rounds in the forest, when there was a baby deer that was born from a mother deer, and the mother deer died, but she was scared. And he adopted this baby deer. And he was taking care of the little baby deer, you know, rockabye baby deer on the treetop, whatever the song goes. And he was kissing the deer, you know, taking care of the deer. It wasn't bad that he was taking care of the deer. But the problem was he became attached and neglected his spiritual activities. I mean, just like today, we were walking on the road, and we didn't see a baby deer. But we saw some turtles that were on the road, getting ready to walk on the road. So I didn't adopt them. I didn't say to Mayapur, let's take them home with us so I can give my love to a turtle. I said, put them in the woods so that it's less likely to go on the road. Actually, there's many turtles around where you live. For some reason, big. Not big, you know, about this size. You seen them?
No, never.
Really?
I don't.
You've seen them. If you go for walks, you see the turtles all the time.
That's why, probably. We don't go.
You need to go. You just sit at home on an exercise bike all day. But you get fresh air. You're supposed to get fresh air, you know.
That's right.
I just walk right on the same road where you live. It's very nice. And anyway, so, but Bharat Maharaj, he had a different idea. He didn't just, like, give the deer some Mahaprasadam like that. the baby deer. He actually got so attached that, you know, the same as Gayatri Mantra, he was thinking of the deer. And one day, as we know, he made a big mistake. The deer, he didn't show up, and he was looking, oh, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. You know, it's like Vipralamba Seva with a deer. That's intense meditation. And he died. Yeah. And he became a deer. The deer that he became, of course, yam yam dapi smaran bhavam yasutayante palegram. You become what you're thinking of at the time of death. And that deer that he became was pretty pious deer that just stayed with the sages all the time and behaved himself. And he had memory, Jata Smarana. He was able to remember his past birth. And so the next birth after that was Jatavarta. And as Jatavarta, he acted stupid so nobody would do anything with him. Because it's a fact, if you act too intelligent, people have so many plans for you. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the most intelligent person, but he refused to graduate from the university because he knew if he graduated from the university, there'd be so much pressure to work and take a job and get into entanglement and everything like that. So, because he was intelligent, he didn't act any other way. But Jatavarta acted very stupid, and there's a whole bunch of different stories that occurred, such as his him be taken by dacoids who tried to offer him to the Bhadrakaliyan, and the dacoids were killed by Bhadrakaliyan and her associates. His brothers used to put him out as a scarecrow in the field. There's so many different stories. But ultimately he ended up as the palanquin carrier for Maharaja Hugana. And as the palanquin carrier for Maharaja Hugana, that means there's four of them. He was one of them. He was avoiding the ants on the path. And that made the palanquin go like this, you know, like if you have a bad tire on your car, right? Flat tire, the car, boom, boom, boom. So the palanquin was going like that. And so Maharaj Mahukana came down from the palanquin and started calling him all sorts of names. And Jatavarta started preaching to him philosophy, you know, the soul is, I'm neither fat or skinny or strong or weak or stupid. I'm a spirit soul. And then Maharaj Rukana realized that he was dealing with a great devotee in the guise of a palanquin carrier. So you never know who you're dealing with. And so he apologized, and he had this interesting discussion about what is spiritual life and how to become pure. So this is the ultimate answer that the Jatavarta gave to King Rukana. Which is, this is really one of the most important verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'll read it. Rahuganai tattapasanayati na chijya nirvapanad grahadva na chandasanayava jilagni suriyari dhanamahat pala rajo vishekam. And I'll read Prabhupada's translation. This is the word by words. My dear King Rahugana, unless one has the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees, one cannot realize the absolute truth. One cannot realize the absolute truth simply by observing celibacy, strictly or by strictly following the rules and regulations of household life, leaving home as a vanaprastha, accepting sannyas. Actually, we used to think in ISKCON, by accepting sannyas, you became a pure devotee. Didn't work. So, and so other people used to think that by becoming a guru, you became a pure devotee. We had one devotee was appointed to be a guru, and another devotee asked me, when did he get his pure devotee initiation? And he said, well, if there's such an initiation, I want it too. There's not. Accepting sannyasa or undergoing severe penances in winter by keeping oneself submerged in water or surrounding oneself in summer by fire and the scorching heat of the sun. There are many other processes to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. Wow. And let me read Prabhupada's purport. Actual knowledge, it's a short purport, actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. I'll read that again. Actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. Wow. That's really an important sentence. Can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhakto, that's from the Brahma Samhita 5:33. One cannot attain the perfection of spiritual life simply by following the directions of the Vedas. Of course, that reminds me also of this verse, the conversation between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Yamaraj, where the conclusion is, tarko pratishta shuddhidana vibhina, that one cannot understand Krishna consciousness or the Vedas simply by studying the Vedas, by argumentation and reasoning, because the Vedas are variegated, but only by mahajaniyena gata sabandha. It's a similar statement in the Mahabharata. One has to approach a pure devotee, and there's this verse I just quoted, Anyami Lashita Shinyum Jnana Karmaya Navratam. That's from the C.C. Chaitanya Majalila, it's also from Nectar Devotion, 19.167. By the grace of such a devotee, one can understand the absolute truth, Krishna and one's relationship with him. A materialistic person sometimes thinks that simply by executing pious activities and remaining at home, one can understand the absolute truth. That is denied in this verse. Nor can one understand the absolute truth simply by observing the rules and regulations of brahmacharya, celibacy. One only has to serve the one only, is this statement, it's an absolute statement. One only has to serve the pure devotee. That will help one understand the absolute truth without fail. It's pretty heavy. So the moral of the story, the point is, that if we want to attain that purity, I mean, first of all, why should we want to attain that purity? Well, yajna supersedite, savaipum samparu dharma, tato bhakti roksuche, haituki pratyata, yajna supersedite. The reason we should want to achieve it is because that's the only thing that's going to satisfy the self. Yajna supersedite. And then, Ottaram, Dikatapasam, Sarvalokamaheshram, Suradam, Sarvaputram, Yatvamam, Shanti, Richard. That's the only way we're going to become peaceful, either. That's why. I mean, even if we take it in a self-centered way, because the only thing that will satisfy the self is unalloyed love for Krishna, which includes love for all Krishna's parts and parcels. That's a point I need to make. You can't say you love Krishna without loving Krishna's children, which is everybody. We mentioned this yesterday, you know, the devotee called the Jata Shatrava, which means he whose enemy is not born. So you can't really say, yeah, you love Krishna. So, and also, another point I want to make was interesting. People don't like when I make this point. You also have to like yourself, too. Because you're also part and parcel of Krishna. Well, not that you spend all the time loving yourself, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the best devotee? Me. You know, Facebook. My Facebook. Me book. So it's not that you spend all the time doing that, but still, you don't want to hate yourself either. You want to have some love for you, because you're a soul too. You're part and parcel of Krishna. Although some people disagree. Some people say that's false ego. But why? Why should you hate yourself? You should love yourself. Don't denigrate yourself. Don't go around saying, I'm a rascal, I'm a fool. Because that's also a disconnection we talked about yesterday, if you do that with yourself. You're not a rascal, you're not a fool. You may be acting like a rascal, but you're actually part and parcel of Krishna. You're a spirit soul. You're an illusion right now, but Krishna loves you. Krishna loves you, he's waiting for you to come back. He sent a spiritual master to try to get you. He's pulling all sorts of tricks to get you back to Godhead, so, you know, be nice to yourself. Charity begins at home. So, Prabhupada even said that one time when there was distributed prasadam, first the devotee's eat. So the point is, that's the only thing that will satisfy the self, to love Krishna. Because we have this unlimited loving propensity. And so these are good reasons. And I mean, I don't know it's our duty, but you know, we do things more based upon emotion than on a sense of duty. Because it's who we are. Like Prabhupada said, the fish, you know, in the water. That's who the fish is, you know. That's his nature, its constitution. Mamli bhangsa jivaloke. Jiva bhuta sanatana. Manashakshtani andriyani prakriti Anikarshati. And that's really, that's our nature. So act according to your nature. And then you'll be satisfied. So that's the reason why we should become pure. And the methodology is given here. So what does that mean for us? To get the mercy of a pure devotee. And in Krishna conscious movement, we all have spiritual masters, and of course Prabhupada is the ultimate Shiksha Guru of everybody in the Krishna conscious movement. And so what does it mean to get Prabhupada's mercy? And one time, one devotee said, you know, I want the dust of your feet, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, well, then you're going to have to keep moving because my feet are always moving. Actually, I have a personal experience with that too. I used to go on the morning walks with Prabhupada on the beach, and I would go behind Prabhupada, and wherever there's a footprint, I would take the sand and throw it in my mouth. Tasty sand. And then I would steal Prabhupada's prasadam remnants. One time I arranged a program for Prabhupada, some reception at an airport, Dallas, Texas, and there was a big Prabhupada ate from his fruit plate, and then I told the devotees, don't worry, I'll clean up. They thought I was being merciful. You know, real, he has a good service attitude. No. Just because I did the whole plate, including the grape stems and the orange rinds and everything like that, and ate them. So, I mean, of course, that's very powerful. It's described that there's powerful substances, you know, the foot bathing water, the dust of the feet, the prasadam remnants. These are all very powerful substances, and there's stories in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially about one devotee, Kalidas, who would go around eating everybody's remnants in the Navadvipa area. But even more so than that is the principle of satisfying the spiritual master, satisfying Srila Prabhupada. So I'm trying to think, what would satisfy Prabhupada? Here's another Prabhupada story, personal. I might as well tell some personal Prabhupada stories. One time I was with Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, and I happened to have been in charge of a temple in South America, because I spent years in South America, where we basically distributed more books than the Radha Damodar Party did in December. And anyway, it was a darshan with Prabhupada, and other devotees were there too. There was one devotee who was showing Prabhupada pictures of a new temple. And Prabhupada was looking at the pictures, and he was pleased, very, very pleased. You know, it's very nice, very nice. And then I said to Prabhupada, you know, Srila Prabhupada, we distributed our temple. Distributed 35,000 of your Bhagavad Gitas in 1 month, hardbound Bhagavad Gitas. 35,000, that's a lot. And it's in Caracas, Venezuela, because Venezuela's not doing too well right now. But that's not because of me. So, and then Prabhupada's, he didn't respond just like, oh, that's nice. He responded by opening his eyes wide, like, wow. And then I said to Prabhupada, here, this devotee, and we have our chief book distributor, his name was Ramanujacharya, that's a nice name. And all Prabhupada disciples, at that time, you know, everyone's Prabhupada disciple, obviously. I said, he distributed 10,000 of those books in 1 month. Hmm. The way we did it, I'll tell you the secret, we can't do it here. The way we did it is in South America, you could go on the buses with an armload of books and pass out a book to each and every person on the bus and go around and collect the money. And the bus drivers let you do it. Then you get off the bus, and we kept books stockpiled all over the city. So, and then we also had walkie-talkies. At that time, we didn't have mobile phones. We could deliver more boxes of books to the different devotees. That's how we distributed 10,000 books, one devotee. So I said to Prabhupada, this devotee distributed 10,000 books, big books, Bhagavad Gita's, 1 month. And Prabhupada's eyes opened even wider, and Prabhupada said, he has the mercy of Krishna. So, wow! You heard me tell the story before. And then I was thinking, but I'm the temple president. I organized the whole thing. What about me? I was always ready to say that to Prabhupada. You know, without me, nothing happened. Prabhupada looked around. He understood exactly what I was thinking. And he just looked around. He said, "Actually, you all have the mercy of Krishna." And then Prabhupada said, he just had to give one final zinger. He said, "But it's just like the gopis. They have more mercy." So he was comparing to this preacher, the Sankirtan devotee. And Prabhupada did say elsewhere that one does Sankirtan in the mood of the gopis. Not that, you know, everybody puts a sari on, but it's the mood like at separation, you know, feeling intense mood. Oh Govinda, feeling your separation. You know, I've quoted this verse before. Jagayatam nimishena chakshusha bhavashayatam chunyayatam jagasaram govinda virahiname. So, oh Govinda, feeling yourself. So if one is engaged in preaching or assisting the preaching too, you know, temple presidents are nice too, because I'm pretty sure one of them is watching me. So, assisting and pushing things forward, making new devotees, and bringing people. There's another story that didn't involve me. That Tamal Krishna Maharaj came to America, and he was Prabhupada's right-hand man in India. And so Prabhupada, without Tamal Krishna Maharaj, was feeling really, you know, I need someone here who is really, you know, can deal in India. Because the rest of the devotees are dealing in India, Prabhupada called them damn cheap babus. Because they would pay 10 times the price for something, or at least 4 times the price for renting a pandal or something like that. And they would think, we got a good deal. And Prabhupada said, you you know, they paid 4 times the price for a pandal. Because they were comparing American prices with Indian prices. You know, they thought rupees are the same as dollars. So, or anyway, so what happened is that Prabhupada wanted to bring Tamal Krishna Maharaj back to India. He thought, you know, he came with that express purpose of bringing Tamal. You heard the story. And Tamal, he was more intelligent. Not that Prabhupada, but he was an intelligent guy. And so what he did is Prabhupada, as soon as Prabhupada came, he dressed up all his new devotees who, you know, new bhaktas. He had them all shaped up, and each coming with one flower to present to Prabhupada. And they presented them to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "Okay, you can stay now." So he convinced Prabhupada. Because of his preaching, the point of making, you know, because we're talking about purity of the divorce, preaching is the essence. Books are the basis. Talking about those things. So, in one way or other, our business is to, what, create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization, to quote a Bhagavatam verse. Tadvig, tadvag, yisar gautam, tadvati plavo, yasmin pati shalakama badavatyupi, namanam tashay shoki, titaniyat, shunbanti gayanti, yirinti yat sarva. That those words, even if they're imperfectly composed, we're not so expert, they have the ability. The Prabhupada was also referring to his own initial translation of the Bhagavatam, because there are some grammatical mistakes there. They have the ability to create a revolution in the impious lives of a misdirected civilization. So somehow or other, and this is why I joined the movement 500 years ago, right after the Lord Chaitanya left the planet. No, that's many years ago. 1971. That's why I joined the movement, because I wanted to save the world. So that's, and that was Prabhupada's mood too. If you see a picture of Prabhupada, I'm going on too long, but anyway, if you see a picture of Prabhupada when he first took sannyas, his danda looks like a gun. Not the danda, but he's holding the danda like a gun. He looks like he's a soldier in the Marines, going out to conquer the enemy like World War II, you know, going and just landing on the beach, Normandy Beach, and ta-ta. You know, you look at the expression on his face, he's so determined. It's amazing, you know, that strength, the strength of determination, purpose, and desire to please the spiritual master. And that's the example Prabhupada gives us. Because many of Prabhupada's godbrothers had the same instruction from Shambhati Sananta Saraswati Thakur to go to the Western world. Prabhupada was not there. Anyone who spoke English nicely had that instruction. And so Prabhupada was not the only one, but Prabhupada took that as his life and soul. And Prabhupada, I mean, because Prabhupada didn't interested in the devotee, but Prabhupada was showing us how one gets the mercy accepting the spiritual master's instruction. And that's the purity. And that purity, you see that Prabhupada's force, you know, Prabhupada had so much potency. Was it Kali Kalera Dhamma Krishna Nama Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vinanda Yetar Gavartana, that in this day and age, the method of Dharma is Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Ekom Dharma is the only Dharma, actually. But Krishna Shakti, one has to be imbued, like purity is the force. Shakti. Shakti means like energy or force. Krishna Shakti Vinanda. Without Krishna Shakti, you can't do it. And Krishna had Shakti. Prabhupada had Shakti. And he was able to do amazing things, like Prabhupada said, turning hippies to happies. I mean, it's amazing. Miracle. That's a miracle. Not simply pulling some ashes out of the hair or something like that, or a rabbit out of a hat. So that's for the Prabhupada. And that's purity is the force. So, and we can also, that force is still there. For those of you who know Star Wars, let the force be with you. Anyway, anyone here seen Star Wars?
Yes, no? I have seen.
You see, there's one honest person here. Other people, I'm sure others have, but they're not willing to raise their hand. So, and now you have it. I know you have it. Innocent devotee. So, so there's that force. The interesting thing about Star Wars is actually it was inspired by the Ramayana. You may or may not be aware of that. There's one person called Joseph Campbell who studied the Ramayana and Mahabharata, and he came out with certain characters out of the Ramayana and Mahabharata, and George Lucas actually utilized those for his films. You may not be. I'm not encouraging you to go to see movies contaminated all your minds, but instead of watching these Bollywood movies, some dancing girls, where they dance around in a circle in the Bombay Railway Station in some romantic affair. That's the essence of the Bollywood movies. Anyway, so getting back to the point. So he did, he did take, just like you have a monkey-like character in Star Wars, Chewbacca. I'm not going to get into it anymore, sorry. Sorry about that one. So, but the point is that there's a force, there's a spiritual force, a force for good. There's also a force for bad. I mean, look at Ravana. Ravana was not just some wimp. He was a powerful person, because he was engaged in tantric practices. There's left-handed tantric, and he was engaged in these practices. Of course, that was all Ram's pastime, as I understand that. And it was Ram's plan to put Ravana there, Jaya Vijaya. But still, there is a negative force in the universe, and there's a positive force. And so we can become instruments. That's what Krishna said to Arjuna, become an instrument. Actually, it's interesting. Same thing. Krishna said to Arjuna, become an instrument. He didn't say become the source of the force or become a hero. He said become an instrument. He said everyone's already killed anyway. Isn't it? Universal form. Everyone's dying. Going to die anyway. You become an instrument. You get the credit. Become an instrument. So we can also become an instrument if we connect to the powerhouse. Another metaphor. If you connect the wires to the powerhouse, they have electricity. And if you don't, they just sit there. They look the same. Until you plug something in, you won't know the difference. So we can also become instruments. That's purity is the force. That's it again. Shakti. Purity is the force. So anyway. Okay. I think we're over time by a lot. All right, so any questions or comments? Yes. Yes, no.
Thank you very much. So I had a question. It may sound a little naive, actually, but you were talking about how we want to please Krishna. So say I'm doing Didi Seva, or I'm dressing my Didis, and I want them to look attractive, but they look attractive to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it really, how would I know that it's pleasing Krishna? It pleases my senses, but...
That's an interesting question which Prabhupada answered. One time, Prabhupada was asked, is Krishna happy? You're talking about the Didis. The Prabhupada said, you're the pujari, you should know. And I know that from deity worship. You know, I for years I did worship Radha Krishna in the temple. When we first installed the deities in North Carolina temple, I was dressing the deities, I was cooking for them and everything like that, until I got kicked off the altar by the head pujari. Anyway, the reason she kicked me off the altar, she didn't like the way I dressed the deities. Anyway, that's another story. You heard that story. No, I won't tell. So anyway, but I could see Krishna would smile. I could still see today. I went to one temple where Krishna was not being served very nicely, and Krishna and Radharani looked like Lord Nrsimhadev. I mean, even I could see that. It was just like, oh my God, when did you install Lord Nrsimhadev? No, that's Radha Krishna. So you can see when Krishna's smiling. And Krishna will smile, the point, Krishna will smile the most when we somehow or other participating in bringing Krishna consciousness to others. You're distributing prasadam. Let's say you offer prasadam to your home deities. Oh yeah, you offer bhoga, and then it becomes prasadam. And then you give it out, and Krishna will be very pleased. Krishna says in the Gita, no one is more dear to me than he who teaches this Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Gita knowledge, to the devotees. And of course, everyone's a devotee. So, that's a secret. Uyatama. The most secret of all secrets. Raja Vijaya, Raja Guru, Pramachandi. Anyway, so, try as far as possible to bring others to Krishna's lotus feet. And your deities, you worship them, and pray to them for that potency, and just, you know, offer things to them and give it out to people. You know, the prasadam distribution is very powerful. Prabhupada said it's a kitchen religion. And many people join the movement because of prasadam, actually especially things cooked in ghee. We talked about this the other day. Like Prabhupada, in the early days, everything was cooked in, vegetables, obviously. Obviously, some things weren't cooked in ghee. Like, I can't think of anything that wasn't cooked in ghee. So, I'm sure there were certain things. Oh, the nectar drink wasn't cooked in ghee. So, we were discussing at your house, like all the different preparations we had in the Sunday feast. Sunday feast was, everything was cooked in ghee. But we had pakoras, cooked in ghee, cauliflower pakoras, cooked in ghee. You know cauliflower pakoras?
Yeah.
Malpura. You know malpura? With strawberry sauce, cooked in ghee. Strawberry sauce wasn't cooked in ghee, but the malpura was cooked in ghee. We had samosas with this very dark filling that we would make. Because I cook too. I know how to cook everything, which I don't do anymore. But samosas with cauliflower and peas, and you cook it really dark and you spice it, so it's dry. And then with the little curly things all over it, instead of the flat things they call samosas nowadays. Mm-hmm. So, and what else? Of course, there's nectar drink, sweet rice,
puri,
halva. Puris, yeah, the puris we made in such a way, cooking ghee. The puris we made in such a way that we would put a little yogurt in the dough so it would get crispy. They weren't like, nowadays you take the puris out of the oil. And they flop around a lot. It's a modern puri. But the way Prabhupada, because I learned from Prabhupada. I mean, so the way they we cooked the puris, they were just like, they would stay puffed up. And so we had white puris and all white puris, which are called chup puris. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and sometimes in the white puris, you put powdered sugar on them. And did I miss anything else? Of course, I forgot about the vegetables. There's a wet vegetable and a dry vegetable, both of which I've eaten.
Gulab-jams.
And gulab-jams. I forgot about the gulab-jams. Sorry about that. And did I forget anything else? I must have forgotten. There's other things. Nectar drink, all that. And that was a standard Sunday feast. And once people ate, Prabhupada said, if you take food cooked in ghee, you'll never forget the taste. And that is true. People, meat eaters, will give up their desire for eating meat if they can take food cooked in ghee. Of course, I don't anymore, I mean, for a variety of reasons. I think after a few years, I've had enough ghee. So we're kitchen religion. So if people have a cooking skill, they can distribute prasadam. And you can also distribute prasadam like the Western people can relate to. Like Prabhupada liked to distribute cookies. One time I had another Prabhupada story with me and Prabhupada. I was with Prabhupada going on a radio or a television interview. Anyway, we went with Prabhupada and I brought a whole plate of cookies. You know, the richest regular sugar cookies, which Prabhupada called Prabhupada cookies. And then we went in, I forgot to give the cookies out to the people. And so I said to Prabhupada, you know, I'm sorry, I forgot to give the cookies out. And Prabhupada said, give me the plate. So Prabhupada ate like 20, 30 cookies on the plate. And Prabhupada also liked nice, tasty prasadam, as we mentioned before, when they tried to give Prabhupada just some boiled subji. Prabhupada said, let the starvation committee go to hell.
Is that? He ate 20 or 30 cookies?
Yeah, he kept eating. I don't know how many, but he kept asking for more and more. I had the plate in back. I was in the back seat. Prabhupada was in the front, and I kept passing out the cookies to Prabhupada, or passing the plate for Prabhupada to take it. And I think they were all gone by the time I finished. I don't have an exact count, but it was a lot. And sometimes after Prabhupada preached, he was pretty hungry. Sri Tagirti talks about that too. Prabhupada sometimes, and when he come back from preaching, he'd eat puris and crush them in milk with some bananas in it. And he would, you know, because Prabhupada was like, he was like a soldier. He was a soldier. He's out there preaching. And I was just listening to some conversations Prabhupada had with Mr. Patel on the beach in Bombay. I don't know if any of you heard these conversations, because Mr. Patel was like an impersonalist. Mm-hmm. And he was Prabhupada's friend, but Prabhupada was like yelling at him. He's a blasting him, you know. Mr. Patel came to cut, coming back for more. And when he didn't show up, Prabhupada would say, where is that Mr. Patel? You know, me. So he'd be presenting different persons like Dr. Radhakrishnan and other people, and Prabhupada was, he's rascal, you know, that so strong. You know, the Prabhupada was extremely strong in his preaching and compassionate, you know, all good qualities. But the main thing is his enthusiasm. You can see where Prabhupada's heart was to save people. It's like, it was almost like a fireman going into a burning building to rescue someone. You know, let's say there's a little baby in the building, and the fireman just like rushes in, risks his own life, carries out the baby, and that's Prabhupada. That's a role model. I mean, that's a real role model. Someone who rushes into the Western world or the Maya's den, which is where we are now. Of course, India is pretty much like that now, too. If you go into Bombay, it's not, or Delhi, it's not any better. And he rushes into it, you know, leaves Vrindavan just to save the dying souls. And that's, you know, so we should assist Prabhupada in his mission, that's the point. Okay. I think, we are way late. Okay, so I guess that's it, right? All glories to Srila Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada.
Jai.
Yeah. Stop it and save it. You have to save it. Yeah.